What's up, college baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast, where we're here to break down college baseball weekend. We'll preview the midweek, but more importantly, we got two fun, exciting activities we're going to do. We're going to show everybody our Field of 64 we created. We actually just did it right before the show. I worked on it last night. We perfected it today. It'll be released in a graphic later. I'll also give you guys a sneak peek into my mock draft. I'll call it mock draft 0.5. It's not all the way finished, but first round's done. Might make a few changes, but we'll share our screen on the YouTube channel and show you guys that. Jack's going to talk about his weekend over in Houston. Dimitri will talk about his pitching performance yesterday, one inning, two strikeouts in the Italian Professional League. We'll give you all that, right? Dimitri's giving me that stone-cold face right now.
Hey, how we doing, guys?
Yeah. We're late April. It's not even mid-April anymore. It is late April. Got about a full month left of the season. In fact, in 30 days, the SEC baseball tournament starts. Pretty fun. Yeah, we're a month away from like those Tuesday games in Durham and in Hoover and wherever else. But yeah, we're getting really close. The home field team of the week we did not even talk about. So we're gonna do it here on the fly. Who's a team we have not done and had a good weekend?
Any suggestions, fellas? I would say it's got to be a team like
the Cal Golden Bears, potentially. Well, no West Coast bias, maybe the Cal Golden Bears.
Cal Golden Bears, it is. Coming off a massive sweep.
Yeah, sweep. Yeah, Cal did sweep Oregon State. Oregon State's been playing like trash recently. But yeah, here we go. You guys are on the YouTube, we're sharing our screen right now. We're looking at the Cal Golden Bears collection.
Only knows how to party.
This is really cool. But anyways,
that Oski yellow shirt is sick.
Yeah, this one is sweet. I like this one. Just a classic little cartoon bear leaning up against the sea. But anyways, if you use our promo code CWS24, you get 15% off your first purchase. We do this every single episode. So if you're new to the show, we're partners with Homefield Apparel, and we had a meeting with them last week. They're about to launch some incredible college baseball stuff we've never seen before. And it's going to be really cool. So just go to homefieldapparel.com, search for your school. As you can see here, they have over 150 schools. They're getting more every single day. So check it out. I mean, 15% off using our promo code. It helps us. It helps them. And we have big Omaha plans with them. So that'll be fun when we get towards the postseason. We'll tell you guys our plans there. Possibly a live show. It'll be good. Anyways, do you guys want to start with the Field of 64? Let's just go ahead and get into it. I know we haven't posted our graphic yet, but we spent a lot of time on it. And I want the fans to see like our thought process on everything.
Can we just recap our weekend pick'em? Kind of a little talk about the weekend, and then let's do the Field of 64.
All right, yeah, we'll do our weekend series pick'em. So, Dimitri, go ahead and share your screen and pull up that graphic because we took some risks as a group. Usually whenever the 11.7 crew all picks the same team, you know, all three on the same team, they usually go 0-3. We did it three times this weekend. We did it with Coastal beating Louisiana. We did it with Northeastern beating UNCW, and then we also did it with, what was the third team? Oh, Tennessee beating Kentucky. And it actually turned out pretty well for us. Out of those three that we all picked the same team, they went 2-3. So Tennessee ended up winning the weekend, and Coastal Carolina ended up winning the weekend series. As you can see here on the YouTube, we got the graphic pulled up. Coastal came through for us. Tennessee came through for us, and we owe UNCW an apology. Because UNCW, they won the weekend, and it was pretty easy. Like, I know Northeastern won Saturday's game by one run. But for the rest, like, UNCW was in charge the whole time. So props to them. They're up there tied with College of Charleston now for first place of the CAA. And we do have UNCW in the Field of 64. And we also snuck in Northeastern. So we'll show you guys that here in a second. But Dimitri, what are your thoughts here on this weekend series pick'em? Overall, really good series. All six of them.
I think I'll start from the top. I think the Coastal Louisiana series, I think we already knew that Coastal was really good. I think that theory told me more about Louisiana saying, hey, they played a cupcake last couple weeks, but it showed me like this team is really good. This is a good baseball team. And I think they're only.
You said that they were on fraud watch.
They were on fraud watch. There is no more fraud watch. There's no fraud warning. That is all gone. That was yesterday's news. That was last night's breaking news. Today on the Weather Channel, there's no fraud watch anymore. The raging Cajuns can continue to rage. But besides, in more serious talk, I really did like Louisiana. I think they battled. They went punch for punch with arguably one of the best lineups in the country in Conway, which is even harder to do. So shout out to them. Florida State, Wake Forest. I think it told us a lot about both teams. Wake, they're on the rise. They're coming back. They're the preseason number one team. They're starting to look a little more like it. They're not quite there yet, but they're coming back. Florida State, on the other hand, two weekend starters out, still almost won the series. They had the lead in the rubber match and almost won it. I think that tells me a lot about Florida State. They can hang with anybody in the country. I think they're going to be a really dangerous team once they're fully healthy in a couple weeks. I mean, I think that series was more of like a juggernaut type series, but super underrated. Tennessee, Kentucky, same shit. Both teams really good. Went punch for punch all weekend until the final three innings on the rubber match. NC State, I mean, I think they're a super underrated team that could end up playing their way into hosting, which we talked about when doing our thing. They have some work to do, but I mean, all of these series were really good. I mean, UNC Wilmington went grand slam after grand slam after grand slam. So, yeah, that's all I've got for these series. TCU, Texas. TCU showed they stink. Texas showed they're staying alive. They're keeping their head above water, staying afloat.
Yeah, let me add on a few of these series. So, like, just starting with the TCU, Texas series, I think TCU only scored one run the last two games combined. And I don't know if we're going to give – like, this Texas pitching staff is weird, right? Like, they went – I'm pretty sure they shut out San Diego all three games earlier in the season. And then go up and get
– San Diego was like opening or second weekend.
Cal Poly, possibly. Yeah, I think it was Cal Poly. Like, the pitching staff looked amazing. And then, like, another weekend, they're giving up 15 runs a game. So, like, Texas, to me, like, right now their RPI is sitting in, like, the 70s. But they're still in the hunt for a Big 12 championship. They took care of business this weekend. TCU, like, that pretty much put the nail in the coffin for their postseason chances. I know their RPI is okay, but what are they, 8-13 in Big 12 play? Like, they really needed this weekend series win on the road against a struggling Texas team. And I think you can kiss your chances goodbye at TCU unless you make a huge run in the Big 12 tournament. But, yeah, I think it showed a lot about Texas. Like, they have more than one way to beat you. Sometimes it's the pitching staff. Sometimes it's the offense. They've yet to, like, put it together in the same weekend. So, sleeper, dangerous team in Texas, in my opinion. But I'll let Jack talk.
I think I figured out Texas. I said it going into that weekend that TCU was kind of a one-horse pony. Like, Peyton Tolley went and won that game on Friday night, right? But because college baseball is such a, like, wishy-washy, the world's upside down, Texas fans are like, oh, man, we're brutal. And then all of a sudden, TCU's starting to feel, well – if you haven't watched TCU all year, Peyton Tolley's done that all year. Like, he's dominated on Friday nights. When they've won, it's because he goes 7-8 innings of scoreless baseball, and they hand it off to their back end. Whereas Texas, they showed their hand a little bit earlier this week, getting beat by Rio Grande, where, like, they've got good arms, but their differential, their margin between their studs and their back, it's not very good afterwards. But, like, on Sunday, they hold TCU to a run because LBJ, LeBaron Johnson, is like, he's a dude. And when he's really good, he's really good off, like, it's a really nice slider and two seam mix. It's like a heavy sinker, whatever you want to call it. And then they hand it off to Gage Bame, who goes and gets a 3-1/3 inning save. They call him the Big Show in Austin. And it's like, when they can just, like, go two dudes, they're really good because their offense has at times, like, carried them the way. Like, Jalen Flores is a top five shortstop in baseball. So that was a big weekend set for them. But I still am worried about the depth in their pitching because I think their four or five best guys, when you get to Omaha, if they can just ride those guys, then they can go beat anybody in the country.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. Texas, look, they still have they have a lot out in front of them, right? With the a lot of winnable games coming up. Plus, like, games, if you win, you, like, will move up in the standings with, like, Oklahoma State and things like that. So I'm not out on Texas yet. Like, I think we said it last episode. The winner of this series, I'll take seriously. And if TCU would have won the series, I'd be like, okay, they're back, whatever, good road win. And I said that the loser of the series is pretty much going to be out of the postseason picture. So keep an eye out for the Texas Longhorns. Now, the series right above it here, the North Carolina NC State game, like, that was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. And, dude, it was so much fun to watch.
Walk-off Thursday night, right?
Yeah, walk-off Thursday night. And, dude, that was a back-and-forth game. I mean, we saw, like, Vance Honeycutt hit two homers. The ball was flying in Raleigh. Both teams, Anthony D'Onofrio was a wizard out there in right field, making plays with his legs, with his arm, with his glove. And, like, when NC State won that game Thursday night, it reminded me what a roller coaster this team can be. When NC State throws strikes and, like, their bullpen does not get shelled, they're a really, really good team. The offense is there. Alec Makarevich is, you know, one of the best power hitters in the country. But there was, like, pieces towards the bottom of the order. Chance Nixon, Trot Nixon's son, played a big part in that Thursday night win. So, like, NC State, to me, we'll talk about it more here when we do the Field of 64. They're one of those, like, variant teams. Like, are they going to be a last four in, or are they going to be a regional host, or are they just going to be a two seed? Like, there's a lot of different ways this NC State team can go. But huge series win at home against North Carolina, who, like, right now we have North Carolina projected to be a national seed. So that's going to hold a lot of weight. I mean, that's pretty much all I had for this series. Like, it was just fun to watch. It was entertaining. It was very similar to the Tennessee-Kentucky series where both teams were just trading blow after blow.
Ben, you're spot on. This is a coaching staff who in years past, like, they've let starters maybe go a little bit too deep into games, and that's where it's burned them. If they can trust their bullpen, like, in a way where they can go to it in the sixth, seventh inning, and they found that guy in Jacob Duden, who's a big, big lumberjack of a righty, about 6'5", 225, and is just thick as hell with, like, three C's. But when they can trust that bullpen and turn it over earlier, where, like, the opposing offenses don't see that starter that third or fourth time through, they're really good. And Eli Serrano, who hit the walk-off on Thursday, that's a second walk-off in a huge down-the-road rivalry game. So I was really impressed with them because you're right. Like, they go and lose series that they shouldn't, you know, even consider to be in. Like, they're just so much more talented. And then they go and beat teams when you're like, they're done. I'm not worried about the Pack. So that was pretty on brand for them.
Yep. Where'd that graphic go? Pull that thing back up.
Oops.
I'm just trying to stay organized. I just want to see. I want to go in order from the bottom up. Actually, I kind of want to end on this Tennessee-Kentucky series, so we'll save that one last. But UNCW, Northeastern, I'll be honest, I was just watching clips on Twitter. I did not renew my Flow Sports subscription, and I probably should have. Like, this series.
What are you talking about? I have one. I keep paying damn $30 a month for this.
Oh, you have one?
I've had it all year. I gave it to you.
I had one for a month, and then I canceled it.
I gave it to you at the beginning of the year.
My bad. I know. Whoops. Well, I should have watched the series.
Month for?
But listen, like, UNCW just keeps doing it, right? Like, they were overlooked all of last season, and they ended up winning the regular season. And then when it got into the conference tournament that Jack was broadcasting, I went to it. You know, everybody was talking about, like, everybody but UNC Wilmington winning it. They were like, they're not offensive enough. Like, they're going to have to, like, blah, 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 blah. Well, they win the tournament as well. And this is, like, another season where, like, going into the year, nobody was talking about UNCW. Everybody was talking about Campbell, Northeastern, Charleston, William & Mary, Elon. Like, there was very few people talking about this UNCW team. And, dude, they have a sophomore first baseman, Tanner Thatch, that has hit over 20 homers this year. He was a guy last year as a freshman that was, like, their key offensive piece. And I thought he would probably get, like, an Ethan Petrie kind of look this year, like not a sophomore slump, but just pitched around, like, let's let somebody else beat him. And teams have pitched around him, but he still makes him pay. So, like, this UNCW team, they're in the 20s in the RPI. They have a really good resume, and they just continue to win series, and they're tied for first place right now with College of Charleston in the CAA standings, even though I guess Charleston has the tiebreaker, but just another team that consistently wins. It's hard to beat this team twice. That's what I have written down in my notes. hard to beat UNCW twice. So another team in the postseason, when they get there, like, they could surprise and win a regional as a 2 seed or a 3 seed.
I'll keep it simplistic on these dudes. When we made this pick, I was like, man, I'm damned if you do, damned if you don't. We've got a whole lot of Pencil Talk ambassadors in both camps. I just figured that the home team on that red turf was going to be able to walk away with it. But my boys at Seahawk Perch, we're going to shout out the main man, Luke Craig, who ended up closing out game three. UNCW, they just run this shit. He was screaming it for pretty much everyone in the Boston Commonwealth area to hear him say it. The only thing I'm going to say about this series is the CAA deserves to get 3 teams in the tournament this year. I've been saying it all year. I'll say it again. It's just really good baseball. And if you get to watch a whole series, you'll realize like that they play all 3 phases of the game at a really elite level.
Yeah, well said. Dimitri, you have any thoughts on this?
I already gave you guys all my thoughts on all of them. I thought that's what we were doing.
Oh, well, I wanted to take a little bit more time. We're only 15 minutes in. We can wrap up these last 3 series in 2 minutes. Let's see. Oh, okay, so Louisiana versus or at Coastal, I think we all kind of saw it coming. Like, Coastal just plays so much better at home than on the road. I think it could have been a different story if this was in Lafayette and at the Teague. There was just moments where Coastal's offense was able to put up crooked numbers, whether it's doubles off the wall, homers, whatever. And the offense was just a little bit too much. Now, what I want to say about both of these teams, like, Louisiana still has a 4-game lead in the Sun Belt over Coastal, which is a pretty big margin. Louisiana has got a tough schedule down the road, and Coastal has a little bit lighter. But anyways, my point is, like, Louisiana is just going to be a pain for anybody that they face in the postseason. Whether they're a 2 seed or a 3 seed, it doesn't matter. Like, these guys don't go away. Even whenever you thought Coastal Carolina was going to run away with the game, Louisiana would battle back and make it a ball game, make it close. They ended up coming back and winning that Saturday game. So I think this series says exactly what we were expecting. A scrappy Louisiana team, but Coastal's offense at home was just a little bit too much. Same thing with Florida State at Wake Forest. Florida State, we saw them on the road at Clemson, what was it, 4 weeks ago, and they weren't able to – well, first of all, they weren't able to trust their bullpen. Plus, they were going into the series down a couple arms. So I honestly should have probably taken Wake Forest here. I still thought Florida State top to bottom was a better team. But I'll tell you this, like, Wake Forest, scary as hell. Like, they have all their pieces back. They're figuring out the pitching staff, pitching rotation. Guys are finding their role. And I know they were preseason unanimous number one team in the nation, and then they kind of fell off a cliff. Like, they're going to be a national seed, I think. I think they're going to end up being a top 8 national seed, hosting a regional, and God, their offense is so scary at home. It is crazy. So Wake Forest, if you're a college baseball investor and you want to throw some money on a team to win the College World Series, now are the best odds you're going to get on Wake Forest, because I think they're going to keep going down. You guys have any thoughts there on the on that series?
I just forgot to mention Florida State bullpen might keep them out of Omaha.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, everything
when they're on the road, that bullpen on the road has been really bad, really, like, really bad.
This team is too good. Like, I feel bad for Link Jarrett. I feel bad for a lot of the older guys on this team in that offense. They're gonna be held pedestrian by that bullpen. I mean, I think they had the lead in all 3 games, or at least 2 of them. I mean, yesterday they had a 5-1 lead through 4 or 5 innings. And Wade kept chipping back, and next thing you know, it was a 2-run homer late, and it was over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm just disappointed with Florida State bullpen. I mean, thinking of Link Jarrett team, Notre Dame bullpen was unbelievable in their College World Series run. They went through Knoxville with that bullpen, starting pitching in bullpen, and it's just disappointing to see the Florida State team, the Link Jarrett team, have an awful bullpen. So.
Even when Link Jarrett was coaching at UNC Greensboro, like when we were playing in the SoCon, I mean, he had a major leaguer in his bullpen, Andrew Wance, who's pitching for the Angels, like at a mid-major school, like, and he had 2 or 3 other guys that were just like these big workhorses that would eat up 2-3 innings out of the bullpen. You're right. I mean, he's always had dudes out of the back end of the bullpen that he just doesn't really have right now to trust.
Could you imagine Wyatt Crowell in the bullpen this year? Or on this team this year?
I mean, they would be significantly better.
I mean, that would be their what's the guy's name from Coastal, the reliever? What's his name? That from a couple when they won the national title?
Beckwith.
That would be their Beckwith this year. That would be their guy to come in the seventh inning. It's over. Ball game's over. They win. That's what they're missing. They're just missing that X factor in the bullpen. But yeah, besides all that.
All right. Any closing thoughts on Wake Forest, Florida State? Jack, you got anything before we move on to probably the best series that we'll see all year?
Let's get to them. We good.
All right, dude. Tennessee at Kentucky was incredible. The only complaint that the broadcasters were not good. Not really into the game, very monotone, very like there would be huge moments and I'm freaking out, jumping up on the couch, like, holy shit, like, oh, Christian Moore again. And they're like, and Christian Moore hits a fly ball to right field. And yep, this one's going to carry over. Home run, his third of the day. It's like, what the hell, man? Like, come on. Like, get something behind it. You're broadcasting a top five overall series. But anyways, that's besides the point. Look, for me, Kentucky showed me a lot. Like, Kentucky's always been overlooked in the SEC. It's crazy to say. I know they hosted a regional last year, and, like, I know that they're, you know, top five overall this year. But, like, that's a team that's built different than a lot of other teams. And I think this is going to make sense in just a second. Just follow along with me. It's going to come full circle. This series kind of got down in the mud, right? Like, it was scrappy. Both teams were you know, fired up at certain points. Like, the crowd was into it. Like, Kentucky, though, can get teams into the mud and make them fold. When a team is probably not mentally strong enough or, like, whatever, like, Kentucky can go in anywhere and win a series. Doesn't matter if it's at home or on the road. Tennessee kind of likes the chippiness, though, and they played into it well. And the big-time players at Tennessee showed up. Between, you know, Blake Burke and Christian Moore, Billy Amick had a big hit. Like, there was, like, this is the type of environment that Tennessee thrives in. And anyways, what it shows me, Kentucky, legitimate Omaha contender. And I think Kentucky, if they get to Omaha, their style of play will play fabulous at Charles Schwab Field. And they're hitting balls in the gap. There was no easy at bats for this Tennessee pitching staff. But at the end of the day, like, Tennessee proved to me, not only are they a top five team, like, they're up there with A&M for, like, most dangerous, lethal, put a crooked number up on you any inning, every inning type of team. So overall, and it was incredible to watch. Really, really fun series.
I agree. I think that series showed me, similar with Louisiana, it showed me, hey, this Kentucky team, no, I don't care who you are, 14-1 in the SEC is unbelievable. But I think 14-1 in the SEC against the bad team is a little different than being the number one team in the SEC. Just, like, you know what I mean? I need to see it. I need to see you against the top three teams in the SEC for real, for me to stamp it and be like, this team is a damn good team. But they showed it. They didn't win the series, but they damn sure as hell showed they belong in the top five. They belong.
What's crazy is Tennessee could have swept. Like, there was one bad inning Tennessee had that, let's see, that Friday night. What day did they win? Friday. It wasn't Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The first game. Kentucky took advantage of a couple Tennessee mistakes. But other than that, like, Tennessee played really, really well.
And it just goes to show you how hard it is to win week in and week out in the SEC. I mean, Kentucky used to be an afterthought. That's just another team that teams have to worry about in the SEC now. Like, what Nick Mangione has built, they're impressive. And it's like they have a style. They have a style that is the Kentucky way.
Right.
Yeah. I've got two quick points on each team that stood out to me big time this weekend. And Ben, I'm so glad you brought up the broadcasters, because I feel like the way that they broadcasted this weekend is really on point with how people are talking about both of these teams, which is wildly underwhelming to the level of play that you see. And you're like, how could you possibly, like 2 years ago, Tennessee was the bad boys of all of baseball, professional baseball included. They were the talk of the town. And this might be Vitello's best team. And we're still like, oh, cool. Like, it's Tennessee. There's still much larger and louder conversations being had. The two things that stood out to me, though, Kentucky's jerseys to me are not Kentucky. Like, for some reason, I feel like I'm not watching Kentucky baseball. I still haven't figured out the new logo. That's my first dumb thought. Second, Ryan Waldschmidt's going to play professional baseball for a super long time. Like, every at-bat is big league as hell. I was fortunate enough to see him in Charleston. Like, the walks to strikeout ratio is insane if you go look at it his entire career. For Tennessee, I think that this team plays for a national championship this year in Omaha. They've got four or five guys that have made starts for them this year. The strikeouts walk ratio on the mound is really impressive. They pitch to contact. They get outs in big time leverage moments. Like, and they just, like, it doesn't matter who they're bringing in out of the pen. Everyone feels like they get it done after six quality innings on the mound every single time. The second thing about Tennessee baseball, I saw him and I met him earlier this year. And I'm not forgetting anybody. I think Christian Moore is the best second baseman in the country. And I think he plays professional baseball for a long time. I know, like, the timing of it after his three home runs on, like, Sunday is obviously, oh, like, it's, you know, recency bias. But the way that he defends that position as well, where he's played some shortstop before, they slide him over to second. I bet if you played him at third, he'd be just fine. So he can be a career utility guy where you see Trey Lipscomb at, you know, with the Nationals right now. Like, he could follow that mold. But I think he's 10x that. Like, I think he's the best second baseman in the country. I'm not forgetting anybody on the West Coast. I want to emphasize that yet again. Man, Tennessee's fun. That's all I got.
Yeah, bold take there. There's going to be a lot of people angry about the best second baseman in the country with Travis Bazzano. Listen, let's talk about Christian Moore just briefly. What he's doing in SEC play is incredible. And so I want to bring this point up. When teams are voting on SEC player of the year, first team all SEC, second team all SEC. At least to my knowledge, the way they used to do it, and I think they still do it, is SEC games only. So it doesn't matter what you did non-conference. It doesn't matter what you do on the midweeks. And I'm telling you this right now, if that's the case, I think Christian Moore might win SEC player of the year. And it's going to, people are going to go nuts because they're going to be like, Charlie Condon and Jack Caglione, this and that. The numbers that Christian Moore is putting up in conference play are crazy. I don't have them in front of me, but all I know is every weekend that kid hits two or three homers.
Wait, do you actually believe what you're saying right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you actually believe Charlie Condon or Jack Caglione are not going to win it? Do you honestly
No. You're trying to get me in trouble. I did not say it. I'm just saying that there's a chance that Christian Moore could win it. And it's going to throw – like, nobody's going to see it happening. But when the coaches have the stats in front of them and they're like, all right, who had the best SEC season?
Let me ask you this question then. Hold on, Jack. Let me ask you this question then. Do you think there's a chance that Jack Caglione or Charlie Condon don't win it?
No. Well, wait, no.
There you go. Then how does Christian Moore have a chance?
What was the question? I think you changed your question on me.
I didn't. I said, is there a chance that Jack Caglione or Charlie Condon do not win SEC Player of the Year? And you said no. I did not change anything.
I'm looking up the SEC stats right here.
I'll tell you right now. Hey, Christian Moore's got 19 home runs on the year. 13 of them are in SEC play. 13 of them are in SEC play. Like, he slugged OPS over 1.0.
Give Christian Moore. Congratulations, Christian Moore.
But I'm with Ben. Like, whereas if you were to see his name, like, maybe jump one of those two guys and finish second in those, like, rankings. Like, I'm just – what he's doing is really stupid.
Hold on. I'm getting SEC stats only.
Hand them up.
I'll share my screen. Because I think this is a good conversation to have. Like, let's talk about SEC Player of the Year. Because, listen, like, Braden Montgomery's up there, in my opinion, too. And, like, Jace Laviolette is up there, too. Like, there's just so many. Hagen Smith is another guy. So, like, votes are going to be spread around. Like, it's not a unanimous pick by any means. As of right now, it could be eventually. But
the only way.
All right, here. I got it pulled up. I got it pulled up. Let me share my screen. Let's see.
The only way Condon or Cags don't win it is if they punish them for being on bad team.
All right, here we go. SEC games only. You guys can see this, right?
Charlie Condon, yep. Charlie Condon, Charlie Condon. That's all I need to see.
Christian Moore hits 32. Christian Moore tied for first in RBIs.
Go to homers.
Christian Moore leading in homers.
Oops, my bad. Dude,
I'm trying to say, Dimitri, is like, and like total bases. Look, he's got the most total bases in SEC play. I'm just saying, like, there's a conversation to be had for SEC player of the year. Now, listen, Condon, Caglione, they could win Golden Spikes. They've had a better overall season. But,
yeah. 13 of his 19 in the SEC. Like, it's really dumb. Like, and for whatever reason, he's the perfect representation of this Vols team where, like, years past, they've gotten a ton of love, and rightfully so. Like when you look at that 21 and 22 team. And then last year, he takes maybe arguably his most underwhelming team to Omaha. And then this year, no one's really talking about him. You don't know the stars like you did in years past. And you're like, wait, they've got maybe the best player in the conference, question mark?
Yeah, here's another point. Christian Moore could potentially win the SEC Triple Crown. Batting average, he's 20 points off. RBIs, he's tied for first. Home runs, he's in first. So it's like, people need to start putting respect on Christian Moore's name and like the season he's having, because conference players of the year is conference stats only. And look, I don't know if the voters are going to do it like that. They might say, look, Condon and Caglione are having some of the best seasons we've ever seen. But I'm just saying, don't sleep on it.
Let me say for the third time, make it very clear, the best second baseman in the country, Christian Moore. Just I know who I'm – best second baseman in the country.
That's still a bold take. Oh, man. Someone's going to clip this, but whatever.
Best.
You know what?
All right, wait,
you know
Jack. What? All right, Jack. So I'm you're saying, like, right if now. You draft a team, your leadoff hitter, second baseman, you're taking Christian Moore over Travis Bezanin.
In a college Hold baseball on. Season. Not for, like, I'm not a professional baseball team. I'm not, like, I'm talking if I got to build a college baseball team, I'll take Christian Moore at second base and I'd hit him in the 2-6 hole. Yeah.
Wait. Hold the damn phone.
Holding the phone right now. What do you got
for us? Here we go. Here we go. Second baseman. Travis Bezanin, 434. All right. 434.
I know his numbers. I know his numbers. I was looking at
it. 19 homers. And he's slugging. His OPS is 1561, buddy.
Christian Moore's is 1200, and he plays in the SEC.
Christian Moore is 70 points lower in batting average, and his OPS is 300 points lower. I'm not saying Christian Moore is bad. Time out. I'm not saying Christian Moore is bad.
I know. We're right here. I know. I'm well aware. I knew it was going to be a hot take. I'm just saying. To do it in the SEC versus the doo-doo head-ass Pac-12 is my difference today.
It's not a hot take. It's a great take. It's just wrong.
Okay.
It's a great take. It's just wrong.
Look, I think at the end of the day, whether it's right – there is no right or wrong answer. I think there's going to be people with, like, different opinions and everything, but we're having a conversation about it, right? Like, we're actually talking about, like, who is maybe the best SEC player this year? Who is the best second baseman in the country? Where – And I'm perfectly okay having these conversations because the college baseball, like, landscape, and I've harped on this a bunch, the college baseball landscape is so lame. People get these opinions in their head that they see back in, like, January or February, and they hold on to it. Or, like, they'll see one player getting a ton of coverage and the other player not, and, like, they hold on to these opinions and say, you're wrong. Like, you're wrong. Like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, where are you getting your opinions from? Like, oh, you get them from a different site, or like you get them from, you know, wherever. You watched one game and you're like, oh, he went off. There needs to be more takes, more opinions, more whatever you want to call it. Like, there needs to be more conversations about players across the country because it's such a national landscape of everybody holds the same opinions and it's so dumb. Like, let's have a conversation. Like, you would have got laughed at if you didn't have LSU in Florida hosting a regional preseason. You would have got laughed at. It's like, well, they're not going to be as good. Like, what makes you think that they're guaranteed to host? And it's like,
but and you now, know what else is annoying? None of those people will circle back and say, hey, you were right. I was wrong.
Nobody does. They're all burner accounts that'll just attack you.
No shit. I think this podcast, we do better than anyone in the country in any sport of doing. Hey, we are big hand up guys. We're the best at it.
Speaking of hand up,
yeah.
Cincinnati Air Cap. Congratulations. You have beaten my made up fake win total of 4.5. You have, 3.5. You have shattered it. You are 9-9 in the Big 12. Congratulations.
We need to apologize to Cincinnati, Baylor, and Missouri because they all three we had their conference win totals at like 4.5 each, and they're all at like 9. Well, maybe not Missouri, but still.
Missouri, they're 6-12. I mean, they're already ahead of schedule.
We clowned Missouri. We said that they wouldn't win a series. Like we put their win total at 4.5. We clowned them. We were wrong.
How the fuck?
Also, one more thing. I want to make this very clear. Timeout. One more thing. Earlier this season, I talked about like hating the phrase, like you don't know ball. Like when someone replies, you don't know ball, or you know ball. Whatever. Like, I'm just so tired of that phrase. There's one more phrase I'm so tired of. And it's when somebody comments, like, update question mark. Like, we'll post, Kentucky will hit a go-ahead homer. And it's like, you know, we'll tweet about the go-ahead homer. And then Vol Nation will come back and say, like, update. Can we have an update? Like, update this. Like, dude.
Come on. You love that shit. They're ready.
I'm so tired of it. I would say over half of our replies this weekend were just people saying, like, update. Can we get an update? Update, please. It's like, dude, I'm so over that. Don't say it anymore. But I know it's going to cause more people to say it now that I say it. But
I mean, hold on. You have been running the Twitter way more lately. I love when I would, like, in the lab, like, running the Twitter, I love when people do update because I quote tweet and be like, update, you're still losing. because they still tweet update, and then the other team will hit a home run, take the lead again. You'll be like, "Are you sure you want that update?"
Yeah, I didn't play into it very well, but I mean, I came out and said like Ryan Waldschmidt deserves SEC Player of the Game or of the Week, and then Christian Moore proceeds and hits 3 homers in the next hour and a half, and then they're all asking for an update. I was like, "Listen, at the time, Ryan Waldschmidt was the SEC Player of the Week. He has like 5 homers this week. He's made diving catches, outfield assists. Like, he's been balling out. He's been on base every single time. But, like, I'm sorry, Christian Moore hits 3 homers in 90 minutes. Like, dude, don't ask for an update. You got your update.
I can feel the frustration mostly because I think this weekend of college baseball was the most update-driven weekend we've had in a long time. Like, I was in the great state of Houston, Texas, with a ton of A&M fans. That A&M Alabama series, I feel like switch scores like maybe every 15 minutes, every half inning, someone was hitting a homer, retake the lead. That Virginia Tech series fucking rocked. Like that was update. Like just homers back and forth either way. Like, yeah, you probably were feeling the heat from everybody.
Yeah, it was coming from all different directions, man. It was tough. It was a battleground on social media this weekend. But yeah, Texas A&M, we haven't even talked about them yet. We'll go ahead. Let's just go ahead and pull up our field of 64 because they're the number one overall seed. Yeah.
Well, we don't
they're crazy.
We don't have a graphic for you yet.
We can just pull up the Excel sheet. It's fun.
All right.
People can see the raw data we were looking behind. But yeah, that Texas A&M Arkansas – or not Arkansas. Texas A&M Alabama series, it looked so good for Alabama at first. It really did. When they jumped out to a 5-0 lead, like the fifth inning, I'm like, dude, Alabama's going to do it. They're going to knock off number one teams in back-to-back weeks. And, I mean, A&M scored a touchdown in, like, 2 minutes. It was like, comparing it to college football, a team goes down and scores. They run the ball 6 times. They have a play-action pass. They punch it in on the 1-yard line on 4th and goal. Like, that's what Alabama was doing. And then A&M just threw an 85-yard bomb for a touchdown. Boom, they take the lead. Dang, dude.
All right,
Alabama grinded for those 5 runs. And A&M made it look like it was nothing. Braden Montgomery hits 2 homers, 1 from each side of the plate. Like, it was just crazy how fast they scored.
And the couple times they do it with 2 outs, too, where, like, how deflating was it for Bama, where you're like, we just needed one more. Like, for the love of God, another crooked number.
Bama's, like, drawing walks on 3-2 counts, 11 pitch at-bats, and then bunting them over and then hitting a single to score a run. And then A&M gets, you know, two doubles off the wall and then back to back homers. It's like, oh, you're losing 6-5 now.
For the love of
God. But here it is. Here's our field of 64. Orange means automatic qualifier, and blue means at large. White just means you're hosting at large, whatever you want to call it. But we definitely highly recommend everybody watching the YouTube on this episode. Our podcast numbers are really good, and our YouTube numbers are getting better, but we're trying to do more visual stuff here. So subscribe to our YouTube. I think we're at like a little over 600, which is crazy. Like, you guys are the best for supporting it. We started it this year, and it's growing really good. I don't really know what YouTube numbers and subscribers mean. Every YouTube channel I watch, you're like and subscribe. I don't think it really matters. Like, whether you get this podcast form or YouTube or whatever, I'm just kind of addicted to growth. Like, I want to see growth and everything. So if you're not subscribed to the YouTube, go ahead and do it. But here we are. We got our field of 64. Texas A&M, number one overall seed. Other than that time they slipped up on the road against Florida, I mean, they've had just awesome pitching, even better hitting. Offense is led by two All-Americans, like, plus probably freshman of the year nationally, Graham Grahovic. So Coach Losnagel's got the boys rolling. We think they're going to win the rest of their SEC series. That was an easy pick. Pretty much two through about 10. Two seed through 10 seed was mix and match. We have it as Clemson, the two overall seed, Arkansas 3, Tennessee 4, North Carolina 5, Kentucky 6, Wake Forest 7, Florida State 8, East Carolina 9, Duke 10. That gave us a lot of trouble. It's just like, dude, flip a coin. Like,
toss up.
I could see any of these teams being the two overall seed. If they just finish strong, like, I can see any of these teams being the 10 overall seed, but I'm pretty confident that all 8 of them are going to host, or all 9 of them, whatever you want to call it. And then the last 6 remaining hosts, Indiana State, we have at 11. Their RPI is really good. Soft schedule. They should carry it. Coastal Carolina, 12. I know they're not leading the Sun Belt. We think they're going to win the Sun Belt tournament, probably win the rest of their weekend series. So their RPI is good enough. They're going to probably host over there in Conway. Virginia, 13. They were just kind of the next best ACC team. Pretty light schedule moving forward, so like, they could bump their way up. I don't really know. Oregon State, 14. Let me stop there. 14, 15, and 16 was tough. Like, that was one of the toughest parts about building this. We have Oregon State, 14, South Carolina, 15, Oklahoma State, 16. I think we could say the winner of the Pac-12 will get that 14 seed, whether it's Arizona or Oregon State, maybe Oregon too. Like, they're still alive. We need a West Coast host, not because of like equality or anything, but just so we can get that 10 p.m. first pitch. Somebody tweeted that at us earlier, like 2 days ago, and I agree 100%. Like, we need that 10 or 11 p.m. first pitch on that Friday of regional play. It just makes it that much better. And then for 15 overall seed, like, we think there's going to be one more SEC team, whether it's South Carolina, Georgia, Vanderbilt, Alabama could play their way in. Like, one of those is going to probably host. So we gave it to South Carolina, just what they've done so far and like the schedule they have remaining. Like, they should be able to take care of business. And then the 16 seed, we have Oklahoma State. And that came down between like Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, possibly Texas. Like, whoever runs away with the Big 12, I think could find themselves in this position to host. So yep. don't get mad at us if your team's not hosting. Like, there's still 4 weekends left plus conference tournaments. Like, it's up for the grabs. This is just how we're projecting it. This could look like crash to you. Okay, sorry. Like, let's look at your field of 64. I'm sure we can find some things that are crashed about that. But we just kind of agreed that this, we like closed our eyes and thought about it. And we're like, can we see this team hosting? Okay, yeah, let's throw them in. So those are the 16 hosts there. You guys want to add anything? I'll let you talk now. I've been talking a lot.
I was just going to go through it. I mean, I was just going to kind of follow up on you. A&M win streaks of 17, 8, and 7 this year. Really impressive. Like, that's by far the best team. But I think whoever finishes first in the SEC will get the number one spot. It could be Arkansas. It could be maybe even be Tennessee. I think Clemson is kind of, as of right now, in what they've done going forward, I think Clemson will end up being kind of locked in at that two spot. It doesn't really matter too much. I mean, if you're top four, it doesn't really matter. North Carolina, I mean, they're quietly putting together a really good year. I mean, I think they've lost a couple of spotlight series, but overall, they're putting a good series. Kentucky, you could make an argument that Kentucky should be higher. You could make an argument for that.
Yeah.
Wake Forest, Florida State right there. I think that Florida State could end up being a 12. I think Wake Forest could easily end up being a 12. We're kind of projecting the rest of the way here. I think Wake Forest heats up and propels themselves into a national seed conversation. Florida State, stay alive at this point. You've done enough. Just stay alive at this point, and you'll be just fine in a national seed. East Carolina could easily be a national seed. I think their schedule is really weak. I think you kind of talked about that.
And then that East Carolina series win against North Carolina, I'm interested to see what the committee says about that. Because, like, they do have the head-to-head. I don't think they're going to put East Carolina in, like, that top five or six picture. Like, if they do get a national seed, it'll be, like, seven or eight. But I don't know, man. East Carolina, they're playing really good baseball. I got three of the best pitchers in the country, too. So, the offense is looking good.
Head-to-head doesn't really matter unless it comes down to two teams in the same conference or something like that. Like, if we were looking at Arkansas and Tennessee, if – for example, Tennessee beat Arkansas in a series. The committee would put them in front of them. But head-to-head doesn't really matter. The full 156 game, full resume.
Well, I think what you're trying to say is what I kind of looked at and I think is going to be the big one is that last series of the year between Duke and North Carolina, to me, is going to decide who gets the national seed. When you look at in Durham, Duke, North Carolina, whoever wins that series is gonna host like nationally. The other is gonna surely host a regional as well. The way that Duke is swinging the bats right now, plus how many arms they have that are bullpen, to me, if they go win the ACC tournament over Clemson, that kind of eradicates that early season win for Clemson over them. And I could even see Duke jumping Clemson at that stage in the game. I know they've been great, But to your point, those in-conference ones, especially late in the year, a little recency bias, that North Carolina Duke one will, to me, take up a Nashville spot for sure.
Yeah. Ben, you were fighting hard for Alabama to be a host. It's just hard to see them digging out of a 7-11 SEC record right now. Could they do it? Yes. Their schedule is there for them to do it. And
yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. I mean – so they're 7-11 SEC, but they do have a series win against Tennessee, and they have a series win against Arkansas. Their last four series are like Mississippi State, Ole Miss, LSU, and Auburn. Like, if they run the table, they'll be considered like a hot team, someone that can play their way in. Like, Alabama hosting is not crazy to think about.
But let's just say they go 2 out of 3 every weekend. They finish 8-4. They'll be 15-15 to finish the SEC season. Go to Hoover, you get 2 wins. And then you could be 17 SEC wins, 500 overall in the SEC. Yeah. Maybe it's just they have to really play well here on out. They need a sweep and win every series, and they'll be in the hosting picture. But it's just hard to project that right now with South Carolina, what, 2 or 3 games in front of them.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of where South Carolina comes in, and their schedule you could consider somewhat favorable. They've got like 1 or 2 hard series left. I don't remember off the top of my head. Oregon State, terrible the last 2 weeks, but overall you can't forget the narrative around them. They were considered the no doubt about it best team in the country at one point with Arkansas, 1A, 1B. That's what everybody was saying. They were that good. They do look that good, and I think they can be that good again. So if they play well the rest of the year, I think they'll be that West Coast team. I don't think the West Coast will have zero hope. There's no way.
Yeah, you talked me out of it. I really wanted to put Arizona there. Just they're playing really good baseball. They're red hot. They're in first place in the Pac-12. But yeah, when you kind of talked me through it, I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, we were talking about Oregon State being one of the best teams in the country for the first 6 weeks. So if they figure it out and finish strong, it's just tough when they've lost 4 straight Pac-12 games. They've lost five out of the last six games. Mm-hmm. Like they're playing bad baseball right now.
Yo, their last four losses are combined five runs. They're playing bad and they're still barely losing. Like that gives me hope that Oregon State will be just fine.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But
anyways, as you can see, like the two seeds here, I mean, they were kind of tough, but at the same time, like we're just projecting. Like we threw Alabama in at the Oklahoma State Regional. Alabama, in my opinion, is either going to host or going to be one of the top two seeds, just with the schedule they have remaining. Unless they just fold and they suck the rest of the year, which would suck, but whatever. Oklahoma, you know, we put them as a two seed pretty high up at South Carolina. It's between them and Oklahoma State. Like, I think one of those two teams will host. UC Irvine staying out west at Oregon State, like a really just powerful two seed, good RPI. Probably not good enough to host, but, you know, they're a tough team. West Virginia up there in the Big 12 standings. Do we want to read off every team? I guess we have to because it's a podcast. No. But
I'm not going to. That is a snooze fest to sit here and read off every team.
All right. Yeah, you're right. Because I was already getting bored just reading it off. All right. So we're going to post a graphic. If you're listening to the podcast, you can kind of follow along with the graphic that we're going to post on Twitter here in just a second. But really, I mean, like the regionals kind of shaped out to be like pretty cool looking regionals. Like, for example, like the Arkansas 3 overall regional, Arkansas, Dallas Baptist, Louisville, Army. That feels like a regional to me. Louisville sitting at 9-9. They were one of the last four teams in, but they have a soft ACC schedule. They're going to finish around 500 in the ACC, which usually gets you in. So, like, that was a cool regional to build. Dallas Baptist is playing bad baseball. They've lost three straight weekend series, but, like, still a good team. Pretty good resume. Like, they would be a strong two seed over there in Arkansas.
Hey, I was going to bring up something. If you're new to college baseball, you're new to listening to us, anything like that, don't forget conference tournament will also play a factor. So, for example, the SEC and ACC, you got 30 conference games. A lot of these teams, let's say they finish 15-15 in conference play, they go to their conference tournament. It is still another opportunity to boost your resume before Selection Monday. So you can go in there and get three more wins, which can be counted as conference wins. And now if you're pushing 18 conference wins, 19 conference wins, you're in the hosting picture, or you're in a strong two seed or whatever, or if you're a bubble team and you go there and get at two or three more wins, you are solidifying yourself from a bubble team to maybe a two seed, a strong two seed. Like, that's how much can change in the final 7 days of the regular season and conference tournament.
So, that's what Ole Miss did in 2022, and they went on to win the national championship. So, another point that I have to bring up about conference tournament week, we're seeing a lot of mid-major conferences like limit how many teams get into the tournament. So like back when we were playing every conference tournament, I feel like every team was invited, you know, 1 through 12 or 1 through 10 or whatever it was. There's a lot of conferences now that are shortening it to like top four teams or top six teams. And they're doing it for RPI purposes because those are more like usually the top four or five teams in your conference are going to have a,
half decent,
we're talking mid-major conferences here, but they're going to have like a decent RPI. So those are just more like quadrant two, maybe possibly quadrant one games that they get in the conference tournament. Plus they're rewarding those teams that, you know, played well all season. I think the CAA is only the top six teams. The Big East only takes the top four. The Big West like doesn't even have a conference tournament. So like, there's just, it's different. It's like a different landscape than like early 2010s when every team made every conference tournament.
And don't forget, quadrant one wins now at home are only top 25 teams in the RPI. On the road, it's top 60. So it is very different. The dynamic is very different in terms of how do you measure a team quad one. Now you got to look at quad one and quad two. Quad two wins and losses matter way more now because a home win against a team that is 30 in the RPI is considered a quad two win. So you've got to look at that. But basically what you're essentially looking at is top 100 wins. No, quad one, quad two, put them together, top 100 win. That is kind of how you more differentiate and rank some of these teams when looking at resumes.
Yep.
And to 100%. To y'all's point, watching and listening, y'all put it together, like not a ton of love to the Pac-12 and Big 12. Like those conference tournaments are going to be like instrumental into like seeing who's going to be able to separate themselves into like being a strong two versus maybe a back half three.
Yeah, 100%.
Completely out and get in.
Yeah.
Last four teams in that we put, like, I know Florida was one of those last four teams in. Look, I know that they're right above 500 and like they're 8-10 in the SEC, but like, what my opinion on Florida is, like, they're going to do just enough to get into that tournament. Plus they have the Caglione factor that the committee might like. The committee's biased, to be honest with you guys. Like, it's not like they're robots.
Don't forget.
And when possibly the best player we've seen in the last 2 years combined, like, they're going to try to find a way to get him in the tournament. So if Florida has 13 SEC wins and then they win two games in Hoover, like, they're probably going to be in as an at-large as a three seed.
Don't forget, our other choices are horrific. They're a bunch of stinky, pinky, poopy team. Poopy, stinky team that we would have taken over Florida if we didn't put Florida in. So the bubble is disgusting right now. And the bubble is, like, ginormous, like this. It'll shrink to this in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, especially with, like, stolen bids, too. When you find a conference that's a one-bid league, yep, like, if somebody wins the American, like, that's a stolen bid because East Carolina is, like, really the only team projected in. And then, like, same thing for, like, the four seeds here. Like, if you're watching on the YouTube, you might be a fan of, like, SEMO, or you might be a fan of Bryant or Samford or whoever. Like, these are all just, like, kind of placeholders, right? Because those conference tournaments, like, none of these teams are getting in for an at-large team. So it's pretty much like whoever's going to win the A-10 or who's going to win the SoCon or whatever. We just kind of took the best team that projects the best for the regular season. But those conference tournaments get crazy.
Hey.
Crazy
is an understatement. Just because your team is not top four, don't lose hope. 19-42 Lane Green Wave were in the tournament because they won their conference tournament. Never lose hope. There's always hope.
Even if your team is stinky.
Unless you're Maryland Eastern Shore, who's 0-35 this year.
They got a shot.
They might be
a little stinky, pinky, poopy team, which, by the way, we have to put that on the shirt. We have to put that on the shirt.
Hey, Ben, what else do you have on our agenda today?
I mean, we can preview the midweeks. I can show, like, a brief, like, mock draft that I put together. Mock draft 0.5. Get the people going. Talk through it a little bit. Let's do that. Yeah, we're less than 3 months away from the draft, so let's go ahead and pull this thing up. I think it's on this tab. Here we go. You guys see this? Ignore, like, the player comps. I'm still playing around with it, and, like, I haven't had write ups or anything on anybody, but, like, as of right now, here's my first round, including supplementary picks 1 through 39. For the MLB draft mock-up. I don't see any way that the Cleveland Guardians don't take Jack Caglione, number one over him. And listen, Condon, Hagan Smith, Braden Montgomery, Bazana, Kurtz, like, those guys, they all deserve number one overall talk. But when you're in the Cleveland Guardians and you have a 6'6 guy that throws left-handed 99 miles an hour, he has hit the most homers combined the last two seasons. And he not only hits homers, but he hit a ball 514 feet the other day. His hands are giant. He wears size 17 shoes. Like, he's built in a factory. And, like, if you're the Cleveland Guardians, if he doesn't work out as a hitter, guess what? You still got him on the mound. Like, you don't have to make him a two-way guy immediately, but you have that in your back pocket. The only way I don't see Cags going number one overall is if he's asking for the $10 million or whatever they have in the signing or the bonus pool, and Cleveland doesn't want to pay it. Like, if Cleveland wants to take a budget cut, like a Bazana or Nick Kurtz or whoever wants to take less money, like, that would be the only excuse. But I got Cags going one to Cleveland. I think Charlie Condon fits perfectly in Cincinnati. Power to all fields, small ballpark. He can play multiple positions for you. I have the Rockies taking Hagan Smith, number three. I think if you're the Rockies, you don't get free agent signings on the mound. Pitchers do not want their careers to end in Colorado. But you go draft a guy that's, my opinion, the best, most polished college pitcher in Hagan Smith. Send him out to Colorado. Maybe you get a 10-year career out of him. I think Braden Montgomery fits the Oakland A's perfectly. Like, he is the... Like, tools-wise, like, he's up there with Cags. And he's up there with, I mean, like power, speed, arm strength, just electric factor. He gets on base, switch hitter. I think Oakland all the way. Bazana to the White Sox.
Wait, okay, why Bazana to the White Sox? They already tried the Nick Madrigal experience and that failed.
You can't compare Nick Madrigal to Travis Bazana.
I'm just saying Oregon State, middle infielder, White Sox.
Yeah. I just think he'll be the best available. The White Sox will take best available at five. I mean, if Bazana goes earlier than that, then they won't. I could see Chase Burns going to the White Sox, to be honest, right there. Like, let's go get the next best college arm or equal. Like, I think Hagen Smith and Chase Burns are pretty much equal as far as, like, one throws right-handed, one throws left-handed. Who do you want? But, yeah, I got Bazana showing up there with the White Sox. I don't know. I think he's a good fit. Kurtz, Burns. The first high school guy I have going is Cam Caminiti. To the Angels. I think the Angels are going to – they've been drafting college guys in the first round recently and, like, promoting them to the big leagues quickly, but their farm system is terrible. And I think Caminiti is, like, one of three high school guys in the whole draft that I think will end up being big leaguers. I'm not big on the high school draft class this year.
Hey,
Ben, I think it's pretty down.
Question. Do you want to go all the way through this, or do you just want to do, like, top 10 and then come back to it once you finalize it?
Yeah, no, I'm going to finish up the top 10. I can finish up at 9. Like, I feel good about the Pirates taking Seaver King at 9. Like, he's going to be a guy that's, like, a true wild card in this draft. I have him, his player comp is Mookie Betts. But he's a guy that's played three different infield positions this year, two different outfield positions, and, like, just electric. I mean, he's one of Jack's favorite players in the country. So if he's around at 9, I think the Pirates take him just based off of what they've taken previously. Tamar Johnson, they took in like number 2 or 3 overall a couple years ago. If they compare that with Seaver King, you got Ke'Bryan Hayes, like you're starting to form like a pretty good utility infield. So, anyways, I'll scroll through the rest if you guys are watching on YouTube, just so you can see, but, I probably like two of my hot takes. I have Gerangelo Sanja going first round. I don't think anybody's projecting him to go to first round, but I think 37 through 39, I think he might get scooped up. Blake Burke, I'm an Astros fan. I want the Astros to take Blake Burke so they can start him at first base July 5th. Like, draft him July 4th or whatever the draft day is. Sign him, put him in the starting lineup immediately. I'm just so tired of the Astros first basemen. Jonathan Singleton, Jose Abreu are two of the worst hitters in major leagues. Like, let's get Blake Burke up there, see what he can do with a wood bat. So, that is, you can see the rest of my mock draft here. J.J. Weatherholt, I think, slides a little bit. Brody Brecht, I think, slides a little bit. But other than that, I'll come out with a full MLB mock draft before the end of the season. I love doing it, though. Man, I love looking at videos. I love looking at stats. I was nerding out last night.
Love it. You guys want to talk midweek and kind of wrap this thing up?
Yeah, let's talk midweeks and wrap it up.
We got to do our series pick'em. People love listening to us debate.
Oh, I already picked our weekend series for this next week. It's awesome.
You got to give the people what they want, though. They love us hearing a bitch at each other. All right,
let's do it. Share your screen. Go to Warren Nolan. Let's preview midweeks, and then we'll do our 6 weekend series pick them.
Let's do it.
I'm pretty confident. I know the 6 that I want. All right, go to schedule for Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, while you're looking up, can I give my one free shout out? No shout out.
Yep.
I'm going to plug this guy all year. He's a first rounder. They won't do it because they're all a bunch of frauds. Lyle Miller-Green went 6 for 6 at Austin Peay yesterday. 6 for 6. Draft that guy.
All right. Anyway, midweek schedule time. Congrats to Lyle Miller-Green.
Thank you.
All right.
Wait, time out. Wait, pause the screen right there. No, go back up. Nope, go back up. Very top, right there. First game. What does that say? 12 p.m. Eastern, Ole Miss hosting North Alabama. Only the real 11.7 fans know why that game is so important.
Massive.
Throw it back to 2019. I'm almost positive it's this game, but Ole Miss always does like an elementary school day where every elementary school student from Oxford to Tupelo to anywhere within the area comes to this game, right? Well, in 2019, Ole Miss was a fringe top 25 team. That was back when we were doing like a legitimate top 25. And They have thousands of Oxford area elementary school kids for this day game. They bus them in, busload. But Ole Miss loses the game to first year Division I North Alabama, and we banned them from the top 25 the rest of the season. We're like, you do not lose this game in front of children and expect to be in the top 25. It was a big hit. People thought it was funny. Even Ole Miss fans thought it was funny.
No. They hated us for it.
They hated it at first, but then they realized it was a bit, and our top 25 didn't matter. But, yeah, that was like expulsion, like grounds for expulsion. Ole Miss, do not lose this game in North Alabama. We will ban you from every – we'll ban you from the
PLO 64. Twitter account.
Yeah, we'll block your Twitter account if you lose this. Anyways, I just had to throw that nugget out there.
All right, anyway. Oh, dude, breaking news. The Bowling Green Falcons have lost their first Mid-American game.
That's not breaking news. They did that on Sunday.
They blew the lead.
I was going to say.
That's not really breaking news. They started 17-0. They blew a lead on Sunday. It is what it is. Congrats to the Bowling Green Falcons.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, I didn't see that yesterday.
I don't see any upset so far. Clemson at Georgia will be fun. A lot of offense. Take the over in that game.
Absolutely.
Those two teams feast on mediocre pitching and just take the over. Don't think, just bet.
North Carolina, East Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina, East Carolina is going to be a good one. Hey. One of those teams I feel like has won like the last seven meetings there. I don't remember which one. Maybe it's East Carolina's beaten NC State like the last seven, or maybe vice versa.
No. NC State already won the first one between them this year, right?
Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. There's like some history between those two teams where like one of those teams dominates.
East Carolina smoked them. That's right.
Yeah.
East Carolina.
They went two state. But this is a big one because this is the Makarevich bowl game, dude. Like the jungle's been crapping on the boy a little bit. He's about to go back and hit like six homers in that game.
Yeah, take Alec Makarevich home run player prop.
Invest all of his player props. All of
them. Ben, I just want to I want to say something here. All the people that were coming on Twitter clowning us for having Campbell ranked too low, we were right. We knew. We should have stuck to our guns all year. They got lucky against Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara gave them that series, and Georgia Southern ended up being a decent series win. Campbell is who we thought they were. They had us in the first half, not going to lie, but they are who we thought they were.
Yeah, they've lost, I think, three CAA series already. Like, they've lost to Delaware, they've lost to Hofstra. Like, it's just not a good scene right now for
Campbell. Lost to Delaware.
But this feels like a game that they win, right? Like, this feels like a game at home, midweek. Duke's, like, in the middle of, like, a grind of an ACC schedule. Like, it feels like a game Campbell's going to win.
Campbell's
Know Stetson's going to beat the shit out of Florida. Like, that's a fact.
Hatter's money line.
Put I think the Hatters might be favorites there.
Yeah, the Stetson's going to be -150, dude.
Yeah. Hey, North Florida money line, ?
No. Florida State plays well in the midweeks. I'll tell you this. I can't remember the last time Mercer beat Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern owns Mercer, like, since I was playing. I think I went 0-4 against Georgia Southern in my career.
That's unfortunate.
They just beat Mercer every single time.
Kenneth or Georgia Tech decent little game. Ooh, man. This is a game. This is important for both teams.
Yeah. Western Kentucky, we have in winning this Conference USA in our field of 64 at Louisville. Louisville struggles in the midweeks. They give up a ton of runs. Their pitching's not deep. I'll be watching that one. I'll tell you this, Maryland at James Madison. Like, James Madison's 23rd in the RPI, and they're at home against, you know, a pretty solid RPI Maryland team. Like, if they can sneak a win there, that'd be big. Liberty always beats ACC teams in the midweek. So
not anymore. They just did that one year.
I felt like it was like two. Here's or three
a good years. One: Stanford at Alabama. Stanford money line ?
Stanford beat Alabama recently, right? Well, who'd they beat in the midweek?
They beat Auburn.
No, I think they lost to Auburn because I bet on them. They beat somebody big. Oh, Kentucky. They beat Kentucky midweek. Coastal, how about Coastal going to Omaha? Coastal is going to Omaha this year, boys.
Charles Schwab
is a fact. They're playing in Charles Schwab Field this year.
They are going to Omaha. Dang, that joke kind of just flew over my head for a hard
time. Yeah, they're playing at Creighton. Tuesday-Wednesday matchup, I think. I think they play twice.
Yo, remember when people clowned it for not having Oral Roberts in our mid-major preseason top 25?
Yeah, they're trash.
11 games under 500.
Dallas Baptist TCU is a big one.
Rebound for both teams. Southern, no, that's about it.
Southern Miss Tulane's fun to watch. I always like Tulane's broadcast. They're good. You're going so fast. Chill out. Scroll back up.
Dude, I promise you, you're not missing anything.
Well, Kansas at Nebraska is always fun. Look, Kansas is 9-9 in the Big 12. That could play a big role.
That midweek
matters.
They're not out yet. They're not out of it yet. Ooh, Northridge, Fresno.
Just shut up. Fresno just got swept by San Jose State. Get out of here.
Yes. I know. We kicked them out of our mid-major.
Two West Coast upsets. Portland will beat the Beavers. The Beavs are going munch-in. Portland
beats
them.
We kicked Portland out, too.
No, we didn't. No, Portland's in our mid-major. Yes. Don't scare me like that. UC Irvine always beats UCLA, so that's a win.
Yeah, that's it.
Go to Wednesday. There's got to be better midweek. This midweek kind of sucks. Nothing. West Virginia Penn State will be fun to watch. I think it's a dollar hot dog night, free entry. It'll be packed, pretty relatively close to each other. God, Mercer's losing another midweek. They're going to lose two midweeks to Georgia Southern. Golly.
Well, guys,
these midweeks are kind of tough, man.
So I want to stage a question for the boys. It's going to be a little bit of a commute for Riz.
All right, but let's get the pick'em done.
Wait, you just interrupted Jack. What'd you say?
All over it. Riz got the long commute. Ben, Club Bromaha Tuesday night, or do we make a little drive up to the jungle? Thoughts?
I think you guys got to do Club Bromaha.
Dude, the jungle's kind of far. It's like 5.5 for me.
Is it really?
Yeah, for me. Nice. I looked it up before.
So then Club Bromaha.
I'll do Club Bromaha Tuesday.
There's two or three good games you guys can key in on.
Yeah. State and we'll talk a little Omaha. We'll talk a little State in the Jungle. And then we can watch Portland upset the Beavs.
Yeah. Club Bromaha Tuesday. We need to bring it back. It's been about 4 weeks. So
I'm in. Let's do it.
It's time
Thursday, nothing really. I mean, Ole Miss, Alabama, I guess. Those kind of suck, too.
All right, here we go. Right,
can I tell you the five series that I know that I really, really want?
We're going to do it here. Pretend that didn't happen.
Why? Why are we pretending?
People want to hear
it. We're as authentic as it comes. Look, I want Army-Navy. Army-Navy, first overall draft pick.
Oh, my God. Army-Navy is in.
First overall draft pick, Army-Navy.
Support the troops, both sides.
Last year, you did a cool little graphic on the pick'em, like American flag or something.
Oh, I sure did. I'll bring it back.
Yeah. Second overall pick. Can I have it for the pod? Morehead State at SEMO. Big inner podcast rivalry.
Wait. Hold on. Let me see what the OVC standings look like.
I don't think it matters. I think this is just a podcast. This is a podcast war. Me and Jack are team Morehead. You're team SEMO.
Speaking of podcast war.
I got my Moorhead shirt right over there. I'll go throw it on.
All right. Oh, dude. What are we getting hyped over?
What?
They're not even – they're still a game or two. You know what? They're still in it.
Who cares? It's about the pod. It's about the brand. I don't care if they're 0-30.
Yeah, this is a pod debate. We've talked about this for 6 weeks now.
All right, what is it? Morehead at SEMO?
Yeah, Morehead at SEMO.
Hey, SEMO Morehead. SEMO Head. SEMO Head. SEMO Head.
All right, no more whispering. You're getting weird with it. You're getting creepy.
How many?
I'm going to throw another one out there. Can I throw out Texas at Oklahoma?
Nope, don't like it.
Why? Okay.
Can I throw out Oregon at Oregon State?
I like that.
Okay. This is a must-have. Florida State at Duke. Got to have it.
Dude, we're doing Florida State again.
At Florida State, come on. Premier ACC matchup. And hey, if you think, hey, we're doing Florida State again, Southern Miss plays at Louisiana Lafayette. We've done those teams about 8 times each, but big series. And if you want to do it again, Troy's playing at Coastal. We've done those teams about 10 times each.
No. We are not doing that one. We are not doing that one. I'm so tired of Coastal and Troy.
I'm on the call for that one.
So we've definitely
that one. A little college game.
Well, you wouldn't be able to pick it. You wouldn't be able to pick that series. So we'll veto it.
But if you are in the Carolinas, come and see the boys. We're doing a broadcast from the beach or from the boardwalk.
Hey, what about Cincinnati at UCF? Former American Athletic team finally facing off in the Big 12.
Nope. That's veto. Dude, you vetoed Texas at Oklahoma, and you want Cincinnati at UCF?
I mean, I was kind of joking, guys. I don't actually.
There's a Big East one that I really like. St. John's at Xavier?
Nope. Stinky poo.
Stinky pinky poo-poo.
Poopy Stinks would pick that series.
What about College of Charleston and Campbell?
Nope.
Okay. That's a great series.
What about Incarnate Word at Lamar?
Nope.
All right.
Lamar just lost 2 out of 3 to A&M Corpus Christi. Kentucky at South Carolina?
Nope.
That's a huge one.
I think we should find 2 horseshit teams. 2 of the most horseshit teams in the country.
Iowa and Nebraska is a pretty cool one. Iowa's playing a little bit better.
Wow. Gonzaga really woke up and decided to play ball in the West Coast Conference.
Yeah.
8-17 out of conference. Lafayette at Bucknell.
I got them to win it all at Bucknell.
Why are we doing that one?
Oh, it's just too bad team.
Why the two bad ones? Let's do some fun storylines. Let's get some fans that are heated. Let's see if Maryland Eastern Shore can get their first win.
Who are they playing?
Wagner.
Oh God, Wagner is gonna smoke them.
Oh my God, smoke them.
Dude, all right, great fun investment.
Hey, we have five. We need one more. All right, I'm done playing games. Who do you guys want?
Who do we have? How many series do we have?
Army, Navy, Morehead, SEMA, Oregon, Oregon State, Florida State, Duke, Southern Miss, Louisiana.
I can't. How many is that? You went too fast.
That's five. I mean, Texas, Oklahoma, or Kentucky, South Carolina. You pick. It's got to be one of those two.
Jack, pick.
Oh, dude, I'm the Red River ride or die, but that's just me. But we did 2 Texas, didn't we? So,
all right, Texas, Oklahoma,
hook 'em.
I don't know. I kind of like Kentucky at South Carolina. No,
I like that one too.
South Carolina at home, Kentucky. Gonna have to prove it on the road. I mean, I can make a case for both of those teams winning. I think Kentucky's a better team, but South Carolina's at home.
To be honest with you, I'm not confident that Texas can win that series at Oklahoma.
What will be more split between fan bases? Because you're right. I think it means that weekend means more to South Carolina. If they want to host a regional and they win against Kentucky, then all
and I think the place is gonna be popping. I think Founders Park will be
this is rocking. Back-to-back weekends with top 5 teams. Do South Carolina.
Ben, what do you think? You don't seem too enthused by that.
No, it's not that. Like, I kind of want both of them now. Who's Utah Valley playing?
No, you know what? Screw that. Texas, Oklahoma, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing Texas series again after the TCU one. Kentucky at South Carolina, done. Case closed. The books have been closed. No more changes.
Can I make one more request? St. John's at Xavier?
No, we already have 6.
Okay, that's fair. It's big. It's a huge Big East battle. Big East is getting two teams in.
I'm anti Big East. I am very high in Prasco Park, though.
Yeah.
Jack, when we get off, when we log off here, go look up Prasco Park on Google.
Prasco? That's the best. Sounds neat. Also, all you right, guys.
Ben, totally is that all we have on the to-do list?
Yeah, that's all we got for this episode. Jack, what were you saying?
I was trying to get Dimitri to count. You guys disregarded me. I almost got him to do it. Oh. I got him to read off the names, but you just totally – yeah, I thought you were on the same page with me. The viewers at home were on the board. I said how many, like four times.
I'm never on the same page. I'm on my own page always.
He did, he did count, though, pre-show when we were doing the Field of 64. He counted how many spots were left. It was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You got 8 spots left.
Hey, that's 2 in a row. One more, we call it a winning streak, baby. We call it a winning streak, boys.
Wait, how many?
Hashtag 2024, no counting.
Wait, hold on. Did he just do it? Did he just go 1, 2 in a row? Did he just, does that?
I think he said 1, 2, 3 is a winning streak.
I said 1, 2, and 3 of the winning streak. That's not counting.
He counted to 3.
That's not counting.
ABC, 1, 2, 3. Counting.
All right, we need to get off. Appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back, Club Rumaha, tomorrow, Tuesday night. That'll be fun. And record a pod Wednesday, maybe Thursday morning, just whenever schedules align. But anyways, we're getting close, guys. Month left before conference tournament. So subscribe to our YouTube. I'm just going to say it. Like and subscribe.
Just end the damn show.
Like and subscribe.